Welcome to Just Another Hunting Podcast. This is Steve with Mountain to Coast Outdoors in collaboration with Joseph from Way Out West Adventures. We dive deep into the world of hunting, exploring tactics, gear, and unforgettable stories from the field. Join us each week as we interview seasoned experts and passionate enthusiasts who share insights and experiences to help you enhance your hunting skills. Whether you're a novice seeking guidance or a veteran hunter looking for new challenges, this is your go-to resource for all things hunting. Tune in each week to step up your game and to connect with the community who shares your love for the great outdoors. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Today we've got Hunter McWaters on. So this should be a good one. Excited to chat with him about the 2024 season, filming hunts, and what's coming up in 2025 to look forward to. So I'll let Hunter do a brief introduction and then we'll jump into this thing.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. It's always interesting with the time difference. It's like 9 p.m. here, which is late for me. But thanks for having me on, dude. And I started my podcast, the Hunter's Quest podcast, like 4 years ago, kind of for fun, like right after I got into Western hunting, just mainly to have conversations with people and learn, and I never really thought I'd be kind of like what I'm doing now, to be honest. But I had a background in media. I worked for a TV show outside of the hunting industry for like 7 years. And so my wife actually surprised me that following year with a cool trip to Kodiak with some buddies. And I just figured, hey, like, I know how to film stuff. Like, I'm going to this awesome location. Like, I might as well at least like film it. So I did that, and some folks, you know, in the space saw it and liked it. And you know, having been trained, you know, professionally in editing and shooting, you know, I had a little bit of a, I don't want to say like a leg up, but I was starting off, you know, with a little more experience than a lot of guys that just kind of pick up a camera and just kind of start from scratch. And so, yeah, that video did pretty well. And I linked up with Brian Call at Gritty and kind of did some work with them for a little bit. I filmed a hunt for Dan Staten with Elk Shape. And I just was like, man, this is like, you know, this is what I want to do. And so, yeah, it just kind of snowballed from there. And just kept going and kept growing and kept grinding and working hard. And I feel like it's kind of what, you know, I feel like it's kind of what I was made to do. So so I feel like, you know, God blessed the project, and been working hard, and it's fun to kind of, I don't feel like I've arrived or anything like that, but things are starting to get traction and starting to click. And so it's exciting to see the hard work pay off, and it's been a really, really fun ride. So yeah, man, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, man. It was kind of short notice. And I know, I work late in the time change, and it's only 6 o'clock here. So
yeah, it's all good, man.
Yeah. I hear you. It's getting late on your end of the world. That's for sure.
Where are you at? You're in Oregon?
I'm in Washington on the coast. So like Okay. Walking country.
Cool.
Yeah. Not far from Oregon, like an hour. So,
all right. Yeah. So I hunted Oregon. I hunted Oregon twice now. I've not hunted Washington. It's the most expensive place for non-residents to build points in. Yeah. You have to basically buy an elk permit to even get a point, which is, yeah, you know, hundreds of dollars. So anyway, I just kind of looked into it this year, but it's like one of the only places I'm not building points, unfortunately. But I don't know, maybe someday I'll make, I don't know what kind of over the counter opportunities there are, but as far as the Pacific Northwest, it's an awesome and underrated place to hunt.
Yeah, it's got some absolutely beautiful and rugged country. Like, I don't think a lot of people realize how rugged Washington and the Oregon can be. Like, the Cascades are, you can get up to 8,000-9,000 feet straight up and down it's gnarly country.
Yeah.
But yeah, for, as far as over the counter opportunities go, I mean, we have over the counter mule deer hunting. If I was you, I would come fall bear hunt August 1st. A lot of bears in Washington. A lot of bears.
I did a fall bear last year in Oregon with some buddies. We did. We saw tons of bears. We killed two. It was my first bear, actually. But you're you there. So non-resident can buy over the counter mule deer tag in Washington.
You know what? I might be wrong on that. I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure, you know, since I live here, I don't really look at non-resident stuff. But I'm pretty sure you can pick up a bear tag for reasonable price. Again,
yeah, though, dude, I'm going to be honest with you. I liked that bear hunt, but they just, I don't know. They just don't get me going the way a deer does. I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I like it, but I have firmly decided after this season, like I kind of felt like I was like a deer guy, but I killed my second elk this year ever, you know, which is obviously not a lot, but and I like elk hunting. I think it's awesome. But like, you know, if I could pick one thing to hunt the rest of my life, and I mean, I'm including sheep and anything else, like I would mule deer. Like if I can hunt mule deer in the rut every year, I wouldn't care about really much of anything else.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I hear a lot
and
of
blacktail.
Yeah. Well, blacktails, in my opinion, to kill a mature blacktail is, I'd argue with anybody, that's the hardest thing to do. I know you killed a nice blacktail, but that's not very common. Like killing a 4-point blacktail buck in Washington, like a good heavy mature buck, is tough.
I was super blessed on that hunt. So I had, you know, I had help from a local friend, really good friend of mine who lives in Oregon, who, you know, he took me into a bunch of his spots. And obviously, like, there's always an aspect of, you know, if you want to call it luck or God, you know, like there's always that element to it. And so, you know, I got totally like blessed with like, yeah, a freaking blacktail of a lifetime, but I understand how rare that is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I love blacktails though.
You were with Luke, right?
I was with Luke. And then, so Luke's cousin, Josh, so Luke and me go way back, and I've probably done more stuff with Luke than probably any other single, you know, like videographer, and we're pretty good friends. And we linked up, and we hunted together for a couple of days, just me and Luke. And then we linked up with his cousin, Josh, who, just awesome dude. He's become a really good friend of mine. Salt of the earth, dude, combat veteran, and just spends an incredible amount of time in the woods. I mean, it's like his pastime is just driving the logging roads and just looking at cuts. Like, and he just, that's where he spends his time. And so he knows the spots, and so he helped us out big time. And Luke killed a really nice buck in the same drainage as my buck, like a couple days later. And we got both those on film. Sounds like you probably saw it. You can watch my buck, which, you know, I'm not trying to brag, but he netted 141 inches, which is huge.
Yes.
He just made it into the Boone and Crockett. It's my only Boone and Crockett animal officially scored. And so that one we got on film, really nice. And that I produced a film about that for Loophole, and it's on the Loophole YouTube channel. And then I filmed Luke kill a really nice 4-point buck a couple of days later, and that one's on my YouTube channel. So if people want to check it out, they're both really good films.
Yeah, I watched both of those. They were awesome. Your spring bear film was awesome as well. I don't think you guys killed a bear, but the quality was incredible.
Yeah, that one, you know, you never know. There's always so much pressure to kill an animal and stuff, and not just for the film. I mean, I want to be successful like anybody else. And, you know, I'm typically traveling and spending a pretty good amount of money and time away from the family and, you know, investment to get out there. And so I can't not put an episode together if we don't fill a tag. But actually, you know, in a weird way, some of the ones where I haven't killed have been like some of my, I feel like some of the better episodes. That one's actually done pretty well, even though we didn't get a bear, but yeah, I've been blessed, man. Like I was looking at the other day, like counting up hunts and stuff. And again, I've had a lot of help. I'm not like trying to say I'm some amazing hunter. I've had a ton of help. I have learned a lot, but I have like an 85% success rate on hunts right now, which is amazing. So yeah. I've been really blessed.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, it's a lot of travel too. I hear you. I live in Washington, so I'm a little closer to these Western states than you are, but it's several hours of driving, several hours. So
yeah. Western hunting for you is going east.
Yes. Yeah. Right on, man. Well, I was going to comment on your comment about mule deer. Archery elk has kind of been like my number one passion for quite a while now. Been blessed as well in that category. Pretty much, I think every year we've went out of state, we've killed at least one bull, if not nice. Two. So we've had a lot of luck there as well. But as I've gotten more into hunting mule deer, like in Idaho and Montana and whatnot, building points in Colorado, I don't know, man, there's just something about them that is starting to kind of make me flip almost. Like they don't bugle, but I don't know, looking for deer, just it's starting to make me wonder, like, I don't know, maybe I'm a deer guy eventually.
Yeah, no, I totally get it, man. I mean, bugling elk is definitely like a, I don't know, it's almost like an otherworldly experience, like being close to elk like that. I haven't done archery elk yet, but this bull behind me, I like for my first ever elk hunt, I drew like this crazy premium high demand elk tag in New Mexico. It wasn't like a landowner, like I drew it.
Yeah.
And I had like a 1 or 2% draw odds on it. And it was a muzzleloader hunt, open sight muzzleloader. So definitely not as challenging as archery, but at the same time, like almost like you got to be in their bubble. You know, I was, I think, 80 yards from that bull when I shot him. So it's amazing. But yeah, I think part of it's because I grew up on the East Coast hunting deer, hunting whitetails. So I kind of have that nostalgic love for them. And like you said, it's, you know, my style of hunting is glassing and like spot and stalk. I don't really know a whole lot about calling elk and stuff like that. I'm learning more, but so for that style, I mean, just to be honest with you, I mean, it's just way easier to see elk. Like they just pop out. They're huge. And deer takes a little more patience, a little more glassing. It's like almost like when you see them, it's like, whoa, like it's more, it almost feels like more of an accomplishment or something.
Yeah.
And another thing is too, man, is like elk are just so much dang work. Like they're so big. Like, you know, you can go in deep, like solo for deer. And if you, it sucks, but if you have to, you can pack the whole thing out.
Yeah.
I've done it. Me and Luke, our first mule deer ever, granted they were tiny mule deer. They were like year and a half old bucks, but still we hiked out like 5.5 miles, each of us with a whole deer and our like winter camp on our back. And it was awful. Don't get me wrong, but we did it. You can't do that with an elk. Like,
yeah, definitely not.
So, yeah, man.
Yeah.
How
at this
many
point, I would
Colorado points you got?
I think I'm at five for elk, five for deer. So I think, just to back up real quick, I definitely would say I'm still an elk guy at this point, but the deer are starting to drift in for sure.
I definitely will do a rosy hunt sometime for sure.
Yeah. Much bigger bodies for sure.
Yeah.
Horns, not so much, but much bigger bodies. But all the bulls I've killed with my bow have been called in. So
yeah.
I personally, at this point, don't think there's anything better than that rush calling a bull in.
Yeah.
But, over the last year or two, just I've killed some 4-point bucks and a couple behind me here. Nothing huge, but you know, decent 4 points anyway. And like what you were saying is like just seeing a somewhat mature mule deer buck just gets me jacked up after hiking in 8 miles, sitting on top of the mountain, glassing for hours, and then you finally catch one on the move after looking at the same hillside for sometimes multiple days, and then all of a sudden, boom, you finally find a pocket of them.
Yeah.
Something about that is pretty rewarding for sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
So
man. 5 points, dude. I just did a Colorado third rifle hunt this year. Amazing hunt. Colorado is actually a really awesome place to hunt. And with 5 points, I mean, you can get a really good hunt. I mean, I got what I would consider a really good hunt with three. And I've heard you can get on like pretty good hunts for even like one or two. So you're sitting pretty there, man.
So here's my dilemma right now. I bought llamas.
Oh, cool.
I've got three males coming in January, but they're only 6 months old, so it's going to be a while before I can pack with them. I've got 5 Wyoming points this year, so I'm really hoping to draw the general tag. It'll be my first time going to Wyoming for
I
elk.
did that this year too.
Okay. Yeah. I think I saw your picture. You killed a nice bull.
Yeah, I did it during rifle, but I drew it on 4 points. An awesome hunt. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's like I was thinking this year, go back to Idaho for rifle elk, rifle deer over the counter, hopefully draw Wyoming general and hunt that archery tag, and then apply for Montana again and hope I can draw the general deer tag to fill this 2025 season. But then the following year, that's where Colorado's kind of like, I don't want to get to the point where I've built so many points that I can't hunt a unit multiple times. You know what I mean? So even if I have 6 points, I might apply. This might sound crazy, but I might apply for something that's 4 or 5 points just so I feel like I can maybe pick that tag up again sooner. But I've been kind of going back and forth with Colorado's second season and third season. I know third season, fourth season, you're going to get more rut activity, but I feel like second season, you can pick up a much better tag. You're just going to have to maybe work a little harder to find those bucks because they're going to be more timbered up. They're going to probably be higher at that point. But I've been
That's
struggling
true.
with that one, second or third, you know?
Yeah, I did third. I just, like I said, just being able to hunt mule deer in the rut is just kind of there's not that many opportunities really to be honest to do it. So it's special, man.
Yeah, this buck behind my head. I shot him. He was the only mule deer I've hunted in the rut. All the rest of them I've killed have been in middle of October, timbered
Okay.
up. So I was super pumped to hunt mule deer in the rut this year. But again,
Yeah,
here soon.
I think I'm gonna do. I might hunt only deer next year. I'm not sure. Well, I got one more caribou hunt that I'm gonna do, and it's probably the last time I'll hunt caribou for a while. I've been kind of on a caribou kick for the last few years, just because the opportunity is shrinking on them. But other than that, man, and we can get into this later if you want to talk about next year. But I'm trying to fill my schedule out with a bunch of deer hunts, so. So yeah.
Well, let's jump into your fall. So, what'd your season start off with?
Yeah, so I did start off in Oregon. I flew out on like July 30th or something, and we had a nice, it was just fun, man. It's like, some hunts I like to do at least like one or two like really backcountry hunts per year, but it's fun too to just to have like a more just chill, like fun hunt. And that's what it kind of was. It was like me and Luke and Josh, and we had one other guy named Ruger with us. And we had a nice camp. Like we had a my friend Josh had like a toy hauler, like a trailer thing. So he even had his boat up there. Like so like we would like did some wakeboarding like middle of the day a couple of days, and
Nice.
had a good time. And hit a bunch of good cuts, and so I think it was opening day, I think Josh killed a really nice sow, like a really old bear, like teeth were like almost gone, And then a couple of days later, I got on a not like a, I mean, really solid bear. I don't think he's like a giant or anything, but like a really good mature boar, like chocolate, dark chocolate color, which is what I wanted. I wanted because out east we have bears, but you never see color phase.
Just
So I
jet
really
black.
wanted to get like a, yeah, I wanted to, I really wanted to get like a chocolate or, you know, something color phase, and was able to do it, and had a great hunt. And then and it's just it's nice, you know, when you're creating content, and you have a family and stuff, like, you know, you want to be able to do as many hunts as you can, but have a little bit of break in between. So being able to get out and get on a cool hunt like August 1st is a great opportunity. So and you know, like you said, with bear, it's pretty easy to get tags. They're not too expensive. So I'm not like trying to be down on bear. I just prefer deer, but it's a great hunt. So that's where we started. And then after that, my goal was, so I've been on like, I guess I've been on technically only three or two caribou hunts to this point, but the first one didn't kill anything, and second one was this guy right here, this bull I shot, which is also my YouTube channel. Really cool hunt. We went 70 river miles up this river into the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, killed two bulls, and then we floated out on pack rafts. Took 2 days of, like, I'm talking 10-hour float days,
Yeah.
to get out. Just epic adventure. That one's on my YouTube channel. You guys should check that out. And so, but I wanted to kill like a later season, like hard-horned bull. But it's really hard to get in with air transporters these days, and it's really expensive. So I wasn't able to find any transporter, so I said, you know what, screw it, I'm freaking renting a vehicle and we're gonna drive the haul road and just try to do it the hard way. And I took my buddy Josh with me, from Oregon, and we went up. We hunted super hard. It was a very weird weather year. All the caribou were way up north in the flat, swampy, just awful, really hard to hunt stuff. And we spent a couple days up there trying to do it with a bow, but it quickly turned into like, let's kill two. Instead of being like, let's kill two nice bulls, it was like, all right, let's try to get my buddy Josh, because it was like a once in a lifetime trip for him. And I was like, it quickly turned into, let's get Josh his first bull. So I brought my bow. And if you know anything about hunting up there, you cannot hunt with a rifle unless you're 5 miles off the road. Which doesn't sound that bad, and it's not in the lower 48. But 5 miles in tundra is, I'm gonna say, equivalent to like 12 to 15 regular miles. Like, it is bad. And like, this is the worst tundra I've ever like seen. Like, I'm talking tussocks, like knee deep in some spots, like definitely like halfway up your shin every step. The mental, it's weird. Like, it's mentally, it's physically tough, but mentally it's tough, because like when you're normally hiking on a trail or even off trail in most places out west, you know, you can kind of let your mind drift, think about other stuff. This stuff, you literally have to intentionally place every step, or you will just like eat it or like break your ankle or something. And it's, there's nowhere really to describe it other than, it's like, I've heard some people say it's like a trampoline with basketballs on top of it, covered in like sod. And
Yeah.
like, when you don't have, and your brain says step on the basketballs, but when you do, like, you just fall off. And then, so you have to like step in the breaks in them, and the breaks have just like water, and you're like, your feet just sink down like 6 inches in water. Really weird. So anyway, we actually hiked in two different spots back into the rifle spot, you know, with all our gear. So we hunted really hard, and had some opportunity on like some cows, but you can't kill cows as non-residents. So we ate tag soup, and but we hunted really hard and had a great adventure. But it was a tough hunt, and it kind of sucked that my buddy Josh wasn't able to get one, but that's hunting. And then let's see, what do we do after that? Okay, then I went to then I went down to New Mexico and did an antelope hunt in some like really like I have a friend who owns a outfitting service called Blackhorn Guide Service, and I picked up some DIY landowner tags from him for antelope. So it's kind of like you buy the tag and they're like, okay, here's your ranch, go for it, kind of deal. And I invited a new friend of mine, this guy named Thosh Collins, who's a Native American guy from the Salt River Pima Nation in Arizona. And he'd never hunted antelope. And I've always been really interested in Native American indigenous culture and their hunting practices and stuff like that. And I've always wanted to kind of like learn more and connect with somebody from that community, but didn't have a chance. So we linked up. I invited him on this hunt. So it was a really unique experience getting to hunt with him, see kind of his perspective on things, his hunting practices, and just kind of find common ground and like bond over hunting, and really unique trip. And we both killed nice goats. Actually, both of us killed on opening day. I mean, it was just, how antelope hunting is. It's not super challenging. And this is a really good spot. And then let's see. What did I do after that? Okay, then that's when I think after that was my elk hunt in Wyoming. And that one, you can stop me at any point if you want. I'm just going, but you can stop me if you want to jump in. But the elk hunt was, like I said, it took four years to draw just the general tag, which it didn't used to be like that, but it is now. And so that's 4 years of buying points for a general tag. So I wanted to do it right. And I've always dreamed of doing like a horseback type elk hunt. However, and I'm not knocking guides or outfitters, but I didn't want to like just buy a guided horseback elk hunt because, as much as you might try to, inject yourself and get involved, like you're a client, you're going to be treated like a client, you're going to be basically a piece of luggage on a horse and you're going to get told where to go, what to do. You're not going to be like, not only are they not going to expect you to do anything with the horses or like have any input really on the hunt, like they don't really want you to because it's a liability and you don't really know what you're doing. So it'd be a lot of just like, sitting there twiddling your thumbs. All right, come on. All right, go. All right, there's the elk. That's just not my, again, there's nothing wrong with that, especially if you're starting off and learning, it could be the way to go. But I think it's human nature, but I've noticed specifically, maybe even more so about myself, when I'm in those situations, I don't really learn anything. I'm not as engaged, just kind of like following a guy, and just, it's just not the same experience. So I didn't want to have like a canned kind of hunt. But I have a friend of mine from the industry who I've known for, he was literally the first guy I ever met at a trade show or at a TAC, actually. Total Archery Challenge. His name's David Merrill. He owns a company called Bow Spider. It's a really cool
Oh,
product
yeah.
for.
I know who he is. I've talked to him before.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's a really cool product. You can put it on your pack or in your truck or anywhere and just kind of attach your bow hands free. You can pull your bow off your pack, with
Yeah.
one hand and be ready to go. Cool product.
Just a
And
gravity system. It's super simple.
yeah.
Yeah.
And effective. And so he invited me to come out. He owns a couple horses and he lives in Wyoming. So we went out and And we hunted some lower stuff the first couple of days, because when we got there, he was like sick as a dog. I'm talking opening morning, he was barfing out the window of the truck going to our spot.
Oh
Yeah, and like falling asleep while we're setting
no.
up camp. Like, so bless his heart, he did not really want to saddle up the horses and go in deep like we did, because it's an incredible amount of work. It's way
Yeah.
more work than even I was expecting. Just, loading the horses, packing the horses, keeping them watered, keeping them fed, tied up right. Like, it's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
And but anyway, hunted the lower stuff for a couple of days. The first day we saw seven grizzly bears and one cow elk. And the
Wow.
second day we saw three wolves and like eight dudes. And we're like, me and my cameraman were like, this is not like, and he wanted to stay down there because he didn't feel good, and he's had really good success in this spot when the weather's right. But it was not. It was like warm,
Too warm.
full moon, sunny, and the
Yeah.
elk were not there, and the predators were everywhere. So we finally talked him into it, and we went in like, gosh, we probably went in like 15 miles or something on the horses, and set up camp. I kind of picked a spot I wanted to try to get to in the morning. So we started walking, and we hadn't made it a mile from camp the first morning. We start hearing bugles go off like
Yeah.
all around,
That's
three or
awesome.
four, and picked out, and we saw one that was right across the river from where we were. He was like 375, 400 yards, and not a giant, but he was a 6-point bull. He broke off on one side on the top, so he was like five on one side and six on the other. But again, like not a monster, but like a mature, solid bull. And I'm not super picky, and like I said, it's only my second elk ever. So yeah, I sent it, and that all these films will be coming out later, but I have like, I try to release like a reel at least of like the kill shots, like in real time. So you can go to my Instagram at The Hunter's Quest and see the whole like shot sequence. Pretty cool. Freaking thing absorbed two bullets like from a 300 Win Mag, like right in the boiler. You know how they do, and like,
Yeah.
and I got a lot of like, Monday morning quarterback like trolling comments like, oh, you should have killed him the first shot,
Oh
like
yeah. Oh
didn't need
yeah.
the second one. But like, screw that, man. Like, you know how it is. Like, elk, I've seen elk hit the dirt, look like they're dead, and then run up across a mountain and like you never see him again. So like,
Yeah.
especially in a backcountry hunt, like I'm slinging bullets until the thing is dead.
Yeah.
And I think any elk hunter that has hunted with a firearm is probably gonna agree, especially when you're back country, you're not trying to chase the thing across the drainage. Like, you want it dead right there so you can cut up and get it out easy as possible. So I hit him three times, third one dropped him, but they were all pretty good shots. And yeah, it's just beautiful, man. The horses, and then the snow rolled in. We hunted for a couple more days back there, saw some more elk. He could have shot one, but decided not to. It just wasn't his bull. It was about the same size as mine, and we already had a ton of meat to pack, and it would have been a challenge getting two mature bulls back with the amount of horses we had. So he decided not. But we came back, and he killed a nice bull the next day, like a mile from our base camp, because that had been.
Like back where you started in the
Yeah,
lower
back when we
country.
started, because by that point we got into the deep spot right as some weather was coming in, and it put a couple inches of snow on the ground, and that pushed the elk down into his low spot, and just the timing was perfect, and he shot a nice bull like a mile from our wall tent,
Oh, wow.
and so we had a really good hunt. And then
Let me stop you on that one real quick.
yeah.
So, first question I got for you is when you go on an out-of-state hunt, I'm a pretty firm believer in like a minimum of 10 days to hunt and then probably a couple of travel days. Do you feel, what's your timeline? What do you shoot for on an out-of-state trip like that?
I agree with you. I think 10 days is I've never had a hunt actually. So I've had a couple. I usually have like seems like I have like one hunt per year where we don't kill something. So those, go the whole time, but normally like we kill usually in the first 5 to 7 days. I feel like, but yes, in a perfect world, I think 10 days is great. Like that's giving you a really good time frame for success. Now I, with the amount of travel I'm doing and just with family and stuff, like I've been trying to keep the whole trip to 10 days lately if I can, unless it's like a bigger trip or something. Which means, usually it's gonna be 8 or 9 days of actually hunting. But yeah, I think you're right on there with that time frame. If you can do the time, if you can put that much time into it, I think it increases your chances for success a lot. And if you're only doing one out of state hunt per year or every other year or something, and you can invest that time, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, one thing I've learned about myself, and it's probably just my personality because I'm kind of, I got a little anxiety. I don't know. Anyway, I feel like if I know I have the time, I'm not in like such a rush to get over to the next ridge. And I've learned on these last couple of trips that patience is key, man. Like especially hunting deer. Like if you're on a ridge and you in your heart you feel like there should be some animals there, like 9 times out of 10 they are. You just got to give them time to show themselves. 2 years ago, we killed a couple bucks and we were in the same basin for 5 days and we were seeing does and seeing does and seeing does, and we saw one decent buck the first day, but the next couple days we didn't see any bucks. And then that fifth morning we found a pocket of bucks bastard up and shot 2 bucks out of that group. My buddy shot his biggest buck. I think it was like low 150s. Anyway, it's just, I feel like when I know I have the time, I let the hunt come to me instead of like feeling like I'm forcing it. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you can definitely sit in a drainage and not see deer for multiple days, but them still be in there.
Yeah.
They're just harder to glass, and they can be really reclusive if they want to be.
So I was also
So,
curious, and you don't have to answer this question because yeah, it's everyone's looking for a tip or whatever. But since you were with a Wyoming resident, were you able to hunt into the wilderness areas, or did you guys, was that something that was on your mind?
You can do that. I'm gonna plead the fifth on that one. No comment.
Yeah, okay, I don't blame you. No worries. That's one thing that's definitely, I've been e-scouting with Go Hunt. I've been working with those guys for a long time. They got an awesome product, but looking at Wyoming for quite a few years, and I've got some units picked out, but that's one thing about Wyoming that drives me freaking nuts is even some of the areas I've wanted to hunt for many reasons, good trophy potential, good harvest success, all that good stuff, good bull to cow ratios, like all the back basins are where the wilderness starts. So it's like September, they're going to be in the back more than likely. They're going to be up high. So it almost feels like I don't even waste your time. So I'm sure the
It's
Wyoming
good to have
residents
the
know that.
local it's good to have a local friend for sure. And that's where, cultivating relationships with folks is key, 'cause especially coming from out of state. Like another example, like my Colorado hunt, like it was a base camp type hunt, and like I knew it was gonna be freezing cold. I can't fly with a propane heater, but I want to have a nice warm base camp. But I
Yeah.
had a buddy, shout out to James, Redemption Hunting, who met me there in Denver and had a truckload of all the camping gear I needed right there for me, and had a
Yeah.
nice camp. So yeah, if you can, and people are super nice. I feel like most hunters that you connect with, even just like on social media, like I've never met this guy in person, but I just rolled out there and, we talked on social media and stuff, but and he gave me, hundreds of dollars worth of camping gear and just said, go for it. And so definitely worth it to cultivate those relationships.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so after Wyoming, what was next?
Yeah, so after that, I had done several hunts. I guess all my hunts this season to this point were with other friends. Some of them were in neutral territory like Alaska, where I had the most Alaska experience. So I was like the leader on that trip. Some of them, like in Wyoming, I'm with the local guy, and it was definitely a team effort, but my goal for this Colorado mule deer hunt was I want to just test my skills, everything I've learned over the past 5 years. I want to do it solo. I didn't even really talk to anybody about the unit. I picked it. I still use Go Hunt Insider. I think it is a really good research tool. So using that, I picked the unit, just basically because it looked good, had lots of public, lots of roadless, and I thought about like calling Hunt and Fool. Actually, I did call Hunt and Fool to like get some intel on the unit, but I never set up the follow-up call to like actually, because like after I talked to him, I was like, you know what, I don't want to talk to anybody. I want to like do this on my own. I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but just out of necessity, coming from out of state, I've actually gotten really good at e-scouting. I use Onyx, maps for on the desktop, and I've, again, not trying to like brag, but like just from what I've learned over the past 5 years, like I'm pretty dang good at like finding spots on a map and showing up and there being animals there. Even when I do talk to people and like ask for pins and spots and stuff, I always find more animals where I go, because people aren't going to give you their best spots. They're going to give you like their second or third spots.
Yeah.
And that's okay to like confirm some or like have backups maybe or whatever. But like just about every time I've like said, hey, I want to check out these spots, they turn out good. So anyway,
I
that
get
was
your point for sure. Like, I feel the same way. I've got a few pins like here and there over the last 6, 7 years. And every time I've done it, which has only been once that I've actually followed through with going to look there. So not much, I guess, but the spots I've e-scouted on my own have turned out to be much better.
Yeah. And how you like to hunt, the stuff you like, where you've had success. And so yeah, I wanted to just do this on my own. And so, I had, and I like e-scouting, and I get, excited about the hunt, and, I'm sitting there on my iPad and looking at stuff. Like, my wife's like, what are you doing? Like, we're
Oh,
trying to
yeah.
watch a movie. And I'm like, oh, just looking at maps. And like, I'm talking about like 7 months before the hunt.
Oh, yeah.
And figuring out the entrance routes and what roads are going to get me in there, old burns, et cetera. And so I found a bunch of good spots, and we went in there and we hit the weather. The weather made travel more challenging, but it was good for the hunting. So when we landed in Denver, there was like 8 to 12 inches of snow on the ground in our hunting area, and it was forecasted for another 8 to 16 inches before the opening day. And that's the other thing I do, which I highly recommend. Like Colorado, it's like a 7 day season. I get there 2 days before the season opens to
Yeah.
scout, see what roads are open, glass, set up camp. Like, there's nothing worse than like getting there night before the opener or like on the opener and you're scrambling, freaking out. Like, I like to, and I always try to shoot my rifle, coming off an airplane, shoot my rifle. It's going to be a different elevation than here. Get it
Yep.
all dialed in. So we got there 2 days early. Wasn't really able to glass. In fact, this spot that I found on my e-scouting that I literally had been like drooling to go glass in this spot because you could just see so much good looking stuff for like months. We only made it in there once. It was completely socked in. I couldn't see anything past like 100 yards. So I still never even got to see it. But anyway, it kind of changed the plan a little bit. But my like plan B spot was right by a campsite. And so we didn't know how bad the roads were going to get overnight. So, and we had to drive to get to the trailhead for this other, my plan A spot. So I said, all right, let's just set up camp, get my rifle dialed, and be ready to go. Like, we were going to go up there and glass the night before, and I was like, we're not going to be able to see anything anyway. And I want to just get my pack squared away, get my everything just ready to go, so we can wake up in the morning and just go. And so we did, and we woke up at like 5. We walked like 2.5 miles. I picked a nice route in there, hit my first glassing knob, get up there. I see a cow and a calf elk. And then I look over here, I see a little bachelor group of three raghorns. Then I see like a nice bull over here. And I'm like, all right, this is good. This is good. There's animals. Like, this is good. And then I look over, boom, I see three does. I'm like, okay, even better. And I'm messing around, getting some footage of the elk and whatnot. And then pick up my binos. And I put it, there's a reel on my Instagram of this too, you can go check out. And this is opening morning. This is like 8 a.m. opening morning. Pull up the thing, boom, big wide four pointer. I didn't notice it, but I saw the footage later, but he was like, how do I say this nicely? He was very aroused. Like, you could see his he could see it. Like, and he was dogging after the doe. And not again, not like, crazy, like 30-inch wide, like trash or anything like that, but like a solid, mature 4-point buck, good body, big swole up neck. And I'm still pretty new at mountain hunting. And one of the biggest things I think that's really hard for guys like me who grew up in flatland to do is to see an animal 2 miles away, accurately mark where that animal is, and close distance to get into range and still be able to see the animal and find it, know where it's at. That's something that it's one of the hardest parts, I think, for me, if you haven't grew up navigating topography and stuff like that. So, but I was able to mark him really good, and I was, proud of myself for really taking really good mental notes of where the deer was. He bedded down, and I made a really solid plan to get into range and kind of work behind him, so he was facing the opposite way. And I was still at this point wasn't sure if I was going to shoot him, just because it was a nice deer, but it was opening morning, and we just had like this great weather come in, and few it wasn't like I said, 3 points, so it's not like a crazy point dump, but anyway, I was like, I'm gonna just get into rifle range on this thing, or see if I can, just for reps, if nothing else. Like, and it was one of the only times too where, because I put a lot of pressure on myself, like too much, to the point where sometimes I like don't even have fun sometimes, just like I'm really trying to work on that. But I got a lot riding on these hunts and stuff, and a lot, of investment. So, but this was like one time where I was like, man, like, I'm gonna go after this deer. If we don't kill it, I literally don't care. We're just gonna hunt more, and we'll find more deer. And so it just worked out perfect, man. And I got into 400 yards. He had no idea we were there. Got set up, beautiful, nice rest, and my cameraman started moving around, and he finally heard us and kind of turned, and then. But I was set up and ready, and he stood, and it was just too perfect. It just felt like God just was like, so took him, hit him perfect, and he didn't go 15 yards, and it just felt really good. Like I said, it was kind of bittersweet to like end it that soon, because it was such a nice place, but it just felt really good that like that culmination of everything I'd learned over the past 5 years, and it just was just super smooth, and probably one of my favorite hunts to this point. So
Yeah,
it was,
that sounds like you had a heck of a season, man. Kill the bull, kill a nice buck, antelope.
yeah, that was my goal, to get like the kind of trifecta. You can include the bear too, but the trifecta of kind of your, quintessential Western game species: antelope, elk, and deer, and nice, mature animals. So I very blessed, awesome season.
Yeah, looking at this picture of this buck, that's a nice buck, man.
Yeah, he's a good buck.
Good forks, heavy.
He had really good mass. He's pretty wide. The one side is like a really nice, he's got good eye guards, really nice, like 4-point one side. The other side had like some kind of weird, we think it's called, we did some research. I think they're called like arterial worms, because we noticed when we were cutting him up, he had tons of worms in his legs and forearms.
Oh, really?
And did some research. There's this one type of worm called arterial worm that can actually enter through the antler when they're growing, and it causes stunted antler growth. And so the back fork on one side's got this weird kind of like knob. It's like it's a knob and like a stunted fork. Huh. And then it's like almost like all the energy from that went into his front fork. So he's got this kind of weird knobby kind of small back fork, but like a really big front fork on one side. And the other one's got like a smaller front fork, like, you know, like you typically expect, in a big back fork.
Yeah.
So kind of a unique, cool buck, and just like a solid mature 4-point. So definitely happy with him, man. And now, you know, now in the future, I can maybe be a little more picky and wait for something else, but it was just too perfect.
Yeah. I hear you. Sometimes it just feels right. Like, I think those are the best ones when, you don't have to think about it. Like,
yeah,
it's just, you see the animal and there, you don't have the thoughts go through your mind of like, is that the one or blah, blah, blah. You just grab the gun and you're instantly like in the moment, making the shot. You know, those are the ones. I mean, size is obviously, we all want to shoot 180 inch bucks. We all want to shoot 350 inch bulls, but, yeah, that's not what it's all about. So.
For sure. And I got time for that. Like I said, I got time to be more picky, and it's my third mule deer ever, only my second mature mule deer. So it's not like I've been doing this for like 20 years, you know, like I got time to be a little more picky. This one just felt right.
Yeah.
And he's a solid buck, man. Like, I'm not trying to downplay him.
Yeah. It's not like, yeah, it looks like a great buck for sure. Yeah. I think too, like, as you get older, at least for me, I've noticed, I don't know, like this year was the first year that I hunted mule deer and I didn't shoot like a monster buck. This buck has a great frame, good forks, heavy, but you can see his fronts, they're not much there. But I was with my buddy Joseph, and it was like the first hunt that I truly actually stuck to my guns and passed on a handful of medium bucks.
Nice.
And I was just like, I'd already killed a 4-point buck in Idaho the same season. So it was like, I don't know. I could be honest with myself, knowing that I could go home empty handed on that trip if I didn't find what I was looking for. And when I found this buck after, you know, 5 days of seeing a bunch of, you know, I saw some other 4-points, but they were pretty spindly, about as wide as their ears, just kind of tall and narrow. When I saw the frame on this one, I was like, yeah, there's no way I'm passing that buck.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah.
Is that your Idaho buck on the next to it?
So let me try to spin this here. So these are Idaho bucks.
And the bottom one looks like an Idaho buck. Like, I feel like Idaho bucks always have like, they're kind of like crooked and like weird, like shape.
Yeah. What's interesting is this year, both of the bucks I shot had, you know, decent frames, good back forks, but they both have weird fronts.
Yeah.
So, and that top 4-point, you can't really tell, but that one was pretty good, but it fell off of a cliff and broke his back forks off. So I'm missing quite a bit of antler on that one. Dang. And then, yeah, my bulls are out in the main part of the house, but anyway. Yeah. So I want to ask you some questions about camera gear here, and then I'll let you go. It's getting kind of late, I know, but
okay.
I know you're filming hunts for the Sportsman's Channel and obviously your YouTube channel. I'm pretty sure you're a Sony guy. I've asked you some questions on Instagram about that, but I'm curious about when you're hiking in and you got your camera strapped on your shoulder, whether you're using Peak Design Clip or whatever, what's your favorite like go-to lens for, a lot of the hunts I film are solo. So I'm talking to the camera, kind of more of that vlog style, but what's your favorite lens for that hiking in, kind of getting the B-roll shots, you know, maybe filming your buddy hiking in or filming yourself a little bit. What's your go-to lens?
So a couple things there. I do have Sonys, but and I couldn't believe I was saying this a couple of years ago, but a lot of the guys that I've been working with lately are Canon, and my gosh, dude, the color is so much better on the Canons than the Sonys. It just is. I prefer my camera guys to have Canon now, just because the color is so much better and easier to work with. Not, I mean, Sony's
Funny.
still great, but what's that?
It's funny you say that real quick. I'm no, you can tell I'm no professional camera guy, but I will say I had an R6, which is nothing special. And I have an A7S III now. I would agree that I think the color in log off my R6, I personally like better. The
Yeah.
only reason I switched to Sony was the lenses. Canon lenses are super expensive and there's not enough options for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
Yeah. I like the color way better in the Canon. It's easier to work with, and I feel like the Sony has like a weird greenish or purplish tint to a lot of it, and it's just harder to get looking right. So back to the lenses. I used to be a cameraman. And I used to do like some filming, like 50-50. As I'm getting, I don't know, I'm just getting older or what, but like it's been nice. Like this last hunt, I like didn't practically film anything. Like I just let my camera guy do everything, and it's pretty freaking awesome, actually. But I still sometimes will carry the camera to get just stuff, but when I'm doing that, yeah, I do use Peak Design. And I like to have something with a little bit of range to it. Probably if I was gonna pick one, would be I have a 24 to 105 that is F28 all the way through.
really?
So
So that's Sigma or what brand is that?
it's a Sony G Master.
Really? I didn't know they made a 24 to 105 F2.8. Huh. That's a nice lens then.
Yeah, I have this. I have like a Tamron 17 to 28 that's like F28. Okay, I misspoke. That 24 to 105 is F4, not 28.
Okay, yeah.
But I have a 28 17 to 28, which looks really good for interviews and holding it and stuff, or like inside the tent. But if you're like hiking and you see a grouse or like a deer, you're not, they're gonna be a dot. Like it's gonna
Yeah.
be crazy. So that's why I would much rather carry that 24 to 105. You can still whip it off, and if you see an animal or your buddy or whatever, you can get that shot. I also have that 24 to 240, which is really nice, but it's a slow lens, which means that it's a variable aperture lens. Like it's which is not a huge deal, but yeah, if I was gonna pick one, it'd be the 24 to 105.
Yeah, I've been struggling with that. I got the same 24 to 240 with the variable ND filter on the front, but as you zoom in, obviously it gets darker. So you're messing with that ND filter to try to get the lighting right. And I just recently switched from filming an S log to Picture Profile 3, which I prefer much better actually, with the ND filter on. It's way less color grading. I think this year will be the first year my mule deer hunt where I have a film with that picture profile, which I'm psyched about, which is kind of a nerdy thing, but
I quit using,
log.
I decided I hate it. I think log and all this stuff is made for like film shoots and like shooting movies and stuff like that, where you're gonna have a colorist and
Yeah.
you're gonna have like very controlled situations and lighting.
Lighting, yeah.
Yeah, like for me, especially with the Canons, I tell my guys now, shoot in natural, like just shoot it normal,
Yeah.
and it looks better, and it saves me about 3 days of freaking tearing my
Color.
hair out and color it.
Yeah.
I think, guys want to get all fancy and shooting log because they see like these like cinema guys doing it, but we're not cinema guys, we're hunters, and it's a very different thing. I don't think it's I think you're creating more work for yourself, and at the end of the day, it doesn't look any better.
No, it doesn't look, I don't think it looks, I got caught in that trap, watching guys like Matty Hipoya or what, I forgot, I don't know how to say his name, but guys like that on YouTube, learn trying to, like, I'm a construction worker, a project manager. Like, I have no experience with cameras. So I've learned everything self-taught, YouTube, asking guys like you, guys like Jeff from PN Wild, guys like I've talked, Gritty and Brad, all I've messaged guys like that, asking questions, learning the hard way. And I got caught in that S-log trap for sure. And man, like finding PP3 and not dealing with that has been a game changer. It's so like, I think I edited like 18 minutes of film for this mule deer hunt, like, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 hours versus S-log 3 would have taken me 3 days to get that far to go back and color grade it all. And it still wouldn't look better. I know it wouldn't because I get frustrated. I'm like, it's good enough. It's good enough. Like, I'm done messing with it. Or you're trying to like drop LUTs on and then the light, it doesn't look right because they're all different. And I don't know. I don't, yeah.
It's totally unnecessary. I mean, like, and if you're a professional like production company and you're shooting like, really expensive high dollar stuff or whatever, okay, cool. But like you said, like, and no one's gonna care. Like, no one's even gonna notice. Like, when
No.
you throw that video on YouTube, they
No.
don't care. Like, oh, look, his dynamic range isn't quite as, there. Like, no, like the shit
Yeah.
that, pardon my French, the stuff that gets like millions of views on YouTube is like
Yeah.
a mom with a phone going to freaking Sam's Club and showing what she does at grocery shopping, and it gets
Right.
like 8 million views.
Yeah.
Like, hunters don't care. Like, practically, I feel like half the time, the worse your stuff looks, the better it performs sometimes. Like, it's maddening. But yeah, don't go down that road. If, or people are listening, like, if you want to be a fancy film guy and do it and create more work for yourself and maybe it'll look better, okay, go for it. But I don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, no, me either. I got 2 years of footage that I'm not happy with because I filmed it in log and got sick of trying to color grade it. And anyway, yeah, never again. That's not happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was always curious because like this year, my brother, I missed my brother's kill shot on his buck because it was like I had the set. I have a 17 to 28 Tamron as well, the F2.8, and that's what I'm like. A lot of my stuff's self-filmed, so I'm like trying to have enough of a wide angle lens to get some of the landscape while I'm talking to the camera. So it's not just my ugly mug all the time.
Yeah.
And it also does good in low light, obviously.
Yeah.
So we're hiking from the tent in the dark over a saddle to get to where we want to glass this huge drainage. And we see 2 bucks. Anyway, he gets the shot, but it's like, there's no way I'm getting my pack off, getting my 17 to 28 off, putting the 200 to 600 on. Still probably kind of too dark to zoom in with that lens anyway, because it's, not low aperture. And I missed the kill shot. So I was like, shit, if I had like an F4 24 to 105, or maybe if I had my 24 to 240, I might have got that shot. And everybody wants to see the kill shot. I almost feel like the video is, it's just missing something.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as good when you miss that action, right? So
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. The 24 is still pretty wide where you can still talk to the, I mean, you still got to hold it out a little further, but you can still
yeah.
get away with it. And something to consider if you're really self-filming a lot is like a camcorder. Like, they make some really good-looking camcorders now where you don't even gotta change lenses. You can just, and you're in there, and like most of the guys, like even dudes like Remy Warren, like legit dudes that self-film, aren't using DSLRs. Something to
Yeah.
think about.
I've thought, I did. I have thought about it because like I killed a bull with my bow and I got the kill shot with my GoPro, but how GoPro footage is at 30 yards. The animal, I mean, it's nothing like having a DSLR or, full frame camera. So yeah, it's just I always go
I'm not
back to
saying go
that.
away to GoPro. I'm saying like,
Yeah, I know what you mean.
yeah,
Like Simong
ultra
Outdoors, I think he
thin
films a
zoom.
lot with one of those.
Yeah.
Zoom way in. Yeah. Yeah.
You
Anyway.
can rent one and try it out.
Yeah, I think I listened to your this was probably over a year ago. I think you were on the PN Wild podcast and
I told Jeff about running stuff. He didn't know about it.
Yeah, like Adorama and
Like what?
Lens rentals. Like I rented a 200 to 600 before I bought it just to try it out. That's a
Yeah.
great option. Yeah.
So that's a smart way to do it, man.
Yeah. But all right, man, enough of this camera stuff. It's been an hour. I appreciate you hopping on.
Yeah, man.
Stay in touch and see how you do this spring and 2025 in the fall.
Yeah, definitely. Appreciate having me on. And anybody listening, if you want to check out the stuff, go to the biggest thing you can do to help me out is just go to YouTube and subscribe. And you can see all the stuff. I just released Hunt today, actually, that I did with Pedro over in Pedro Ampuero over in Spain. Shot two nice roebucks and got some cool stuff on the docket. I'm going in April. Have you seen Joe Edlington, J.E. Wilds, his
Oh, yeah.
channel?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go hunt with him in New Zealand in April.
Oh, really? That'll be rad.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that and other cool stuff. So, yeah, man, thanks for having me on, dude.
Yeah. So, yeah, make sure you guys go check out Hunter's YouTube channel. And I want to say one more thing real quick. I'm dropping a film, my archery elk hunt, on the 8th, December 8th at 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. This podcast is going to come out Monday the 9th. So when you hear this, you'll be a day late already. But make sure you go watch that and do the same. Subscribe for us both. So have a good night, man, and I'll catch you later.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.